Hey, football fans, are you obsessed with the game?
Oh, yeah.
Do you find yourself looking for breakdowns from every angle? For those who can't get enough, subscribe to Brian Baldinger's podcast, The Best Football Show, where he discusses the top teams and players from around the league each week.
That's what I watched this week, a dominant performance.
New episodes drop every weekday, including Trench Talk Tuesdays with former NFL lineman Mark Schlereth. Make sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Oh, do you?
Yeah, I am so sick and tired already of the, it's not a rush to judgment, it was a sprint to judgment of everyone going, oh my gosh, what a waste, too many games, look at the first round quality, look at the disparity of the scores, shut up, just give me more games. It's like the same people who question whether there should be a week 17, extend any type of football as long as possible, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Baseball, boring. Basketball, problems. Hockey, a distant fourth to many. Give me as much NFL and college as possible. We are going to get upsets like moving forward. We are. If we get 3 years of 20-point, 30-point first-round bowl game blowouts, okay. But can we give it like a little bit of time to judge it? That was my reaction with people being, oh, what's the point? No, you want to take it to 14? What's the point? You're just going to get blowouts. It was nothing but absolute beatdowns with four teams.
Yeah.
It was nothing but beatdowns with four teams. And this year was wide open. We felt like we didn't have a great team. And just because one playoff tournament shows, you know, the chalk winning out, doesn't mean we should blow the whole thing up. That rush to judgment is so ignorant.
Well, and we've got... This is so new, so everybody's trying to figure out what matters. Like, does CFP football change from the regular season? Like, when you turn it into three rounds, do teams... it's like the same thing of just, like, when NFL football comes around, they're like, oh, when you get to the playoffs, you got to run the ball. Even if you haven't during the year, you got to run the ball. You got to do this, you got to do that. So I'll tell you, the thing that stood out to me the first week was, oh, I severely underrated what an advantage playing the game on campus is. Like, the home teams have a big advantage.
Mm.
And so, to me, that was the one thing I did say. It was like, oh, okay, we might learn moving forward. If you have a home game in that opening round, it's going to be really difficult for whoever the underdog is to win that game. Because I don't think Clemson gets their ass kicked like that if they're playing in Clemson. I don't think that Indiana has the same sort of problem with Notre Dame. I don't think Tennessee, if they're playing at Rocky Top, you know, they're better. And so, I don't think they win those games necessarily, but they're not getting shellacked like that. So I do wonder if maybe there's obviously going to be expansion, but if under this current setup, if this was the setup, I do wonder if they would look at it and adjust and say, maybe we put the bowl games back here and then the first games for the first four, the semis, like when you get in the next round, you turn those into the on-campus home games where you reward those teams and they get better competition. You've thinned it out and then we get better games on campus there. I kind of wondered if that was how they're going to react to this.
All right, tonight though, all eyes on Ashton Jeanty here in the Metroplex as it's going to be Boise State against Penn State, and the Nittany Lions are favored by 11.5 right now.
Yeah, which is funny because that was they were at home against SMU, and I think they were a smaller favorite than they were against Boise State.
Man, or than they are against Boise State. That was a disaster.
Can't turn over the ball. That's what they did all year.
Quarterback disaster.
Yeah. No, that's been the issue for them all year. Now, I always have a little bit of hesitance when it comes to Penn State with Drew Aller and the way that he plays in big games. He didn't play great against SMU, and consistently he plays worse football on big stages. And so
now Boise is the 3 seed in this technically.
Yeah.
Penn State's the 6, and Boise is the underdog by double digits.
Yeah, because in the actual CFP rankings, I believe Penn State is 4 or 5, or was 4 or 5, and then Boise was down at like 10. And so Penn State is considered a better football team, but it is, I think, just the Jeanty factor is a significant one. They played Oregon really well earlier this year, Boise State did. And so I think that Boise's got a shot because I don't trust James Franklin. I don't trust Drew Aller in big games. Penn State is the better football team, and I would probably pick them, but Boise's got a shot to win this one. Now, I'm curious, Ashton Jeanty, people keep talking about, well, you've got, if he could play 2-3 more playoff games, he might break Barry Sanders' record. Which is a more illegitimate takedown of a rushing record if Saquon gets it in 17 weeks or if Jenty gets it going into the playoff and takes away Barry Sanders' record.
And what would be the difference in games compared to Barry?
Like 3. But it's a different era, too. Like, do you era adjust at all and say that's right. still more impressive that he did it in those games?
Look, I want to give Saquon. I love Saquon. I don't know why I didn't know this much about him in New York, since it's the media capital of the world. I love this guy's personality. He's saying all the right things. And he also went into being a historian yesterday, and where he's like, well, if you really want to be a historian, I understand how maybe I shouldn't even be in the Dickerson conversation because of the amount of games played. Or you should really just give it to OJ because he played 2 or 3 less games. Like, he went in, he knew exactly how many games played and everything that went into it. He's like, I'm fine with whatever Sirianni wants to do. I understand we got bigger goals. Like, I'm falling in love with Saquon Barkley, the person, unfortunately. I really am.
Did you think it was a little odd that he invoked at all O.J. Simpson? They're like, ah, just avoid that. Just stop right. Eric Dickerson. You don't need to go back. Go to Jim Brown. Say you really should go to Jim Brown or something like that.
What's your answer to the legitimacy of the records? Because yesterday you said, forget it. Just give Saquon the crown if he ends up getting it. We don't hold it against other people.
Yeah, I think it would obviously be, you would probably, not an asterisk in the record book. If it's in the record book, it goes to Ashton Jenty. I think it's worth referencing, though, if you're talking about it historically in future years. Like, well, you got to remember he played more games. Just like it's worth mentioning, Randy Moss has the receiving touchdown record for a single season, but it's worth mentioning, well, he did do it in 4 more games than Jerry Rice. But we don't put an asterisk next to it. We just say, this is the reality, and this is how he got the record. But the reality is that it was done in a quicker time frame with Babe Ruth or with Jerry Rice or with Barry Sanders. And so I think it's worth noting. But I wouldn't say it's worth denting their record at all.
And then tomorrow on our sister station, News Radio 1080 KRLD at noon, Peyton and Bobby will be on eggshells, maybe not, as the Texas Longhorns take on Arizona State. The Longhorns are favored by 13 against RJ Choppies and our new favorite coach, in Kenny Dillingham.
Yeah, not at all anything that I'm concerned about. 13 is not enough points. It should be 23. And
you went off in your email last night.
This loser, this little Merrill Hodge wannabe, Cam Scataboo, or whatever other white running back you want to come up with.
Merrill Hodge wannabe.
Kyle Juszczyk without the blocking, however you want to, whatever you want to call it. He's been a really good player. He's getting a little too big for his britches. He's talking a lot. So he had done media availability yesterday, and I was looking everywhere for the actual sound clip. Nobody has posted the sound clip. It's like, I wonder if they're just wanting to bury this a little bit. But he was talking to media yesterday, and he finished 5th in the Heisman voting, and he was asked about facing the number one defense in the country and how he'd be affected by the Longhorns trying to stop him. And this is what he said. They continue to keep saying that people are going to try to stop me. There's nobody out there that can stop me. We played in 13 games, and I've been the target on each one, so I'm not too worried. We're going to play our game and play ball and see what happens out there. Well, here's the thing. You did get stopped by Texas State earlier in the year, and you think you're just going to do whatever to the Longhorns? The Longhorns aren't the Iowa State Cyclones, who he runs for 177 on and have one of the worst rush defenses in the NFL. The Texas State, Texas Tech, back-to-back games against those two teams, which are not juggernauts to stop the run game. He averaged 2.9 yards per carry in those back-to-back games. So, great. Run all over a trash team in Arizona. Run all over a porous run defense against Iowa State. That's not Texas. In fact, he's not gonna pick up 80 yards in this game. They're going to hold him under, and it's going to be hilarious to me because he will not stop talking.
Kenny Dillingham, the best quote in maybe all of football, defended his running back.
I think if you're not confident, right, so everybody's different. I think sometimes people want to put personalities in a bubble, what you're supposed to say, what you're not supposed to say. Make sure you say this. And everybody wants to just almost take personalities and force them into what it should look like. I couldn't disagree more with that. I want our guys to be themselves. That's it. If what makes you play better and what you feel is you got to express it, express it.
So there's Dillingham. By the way, shout out to Jared Sandler, listening on the Odyssey app from Spain. Look at that dedicated. This is why I love this dude. I love this guy. He's on the big time European vacation.
When did he go to Spain?
I guess he just left London.
Maybe that's why he was distracted when he was hosting with us last week. He's doing some planning.
Whoever sits in that chair. RJ's gotten better, though. RJ's gotten better off the computer.
You weren't here last week.
Shout out Jared and Emily Sandler listening on the Odyssey app from Spain and everyone else listening on the Odyssey app wherever you are. Then you move on to the 4 o'clock game, the game that Nick Saban and others think should not be happening because it's way too much of a powerhouse matchup at 4 o'clock tomorrow. This is the College Football Kegger on the Fan, Ohio State and Oregon.
Yeah, and this is, people are frustrated by this because there's an argument from a lot of people. There are a number of people who believe these are the two best teams in the country. We talked to Stuart Mandel, who said most talented team in the country, in all likelihood, Oregon or Ohio State. Oregon, undefeated team. I'm stunned that Ohio State's favored in this.
By 2.5.
I have no understanding of why they're being given this credence. Now, Choppy last week was asking his handicapping buddy about, hey, what's the deal with Oregon? Why would Ohio State be favored here? Especially after Oregon won a game earlier. Ohio State's had all these different issues. He said it apparently relates to some of their advanced metrics on defense have looked really poor lately for Oregon. But this is where, and this is the argument I had with Chop last week. When you're doing betting or you're looking at different things, I understand you have the certain numbers you look at and the analytics and the forecasting. But at what point do you look at the factors of, like, there's a reason they lose all the time to Michigan and Oregon? Or the Ryan Day factor of, like these intangible things that you cannot measure.
It's always been Ohio against the world.
Exactly. But when you look at those aspects, how do you weigh that? It's like when you asked yesterday about the NFC East thing for 20 years. It's like, do you bet on that? You probably don't bet by it, but how do you explain it?
But what is the intangible common denominator between Michigan and this? Are you just talking about a big game?
No, not even a
Michigan
big
game. Michigan versus Oregon.
What's the parallel? More what I'm getting at here is Michigan, I think, is absolutely in their head. Oregon, not as much.
Right.
But Oregon has been a stylistic challenge for them in the past. And the Michigan issue is still so fresh, what happened on that field where Ryan Day just looked spineless and was destroyed. And people wondered, how are they going to rally? How are they going to play? They played really well against Tennessee, and that's great. But are you going to be able to hang with the top team in the country that in a year of ups and downs and everything else has not slipped? They're the one team who didn't slip at all and has beaten you this year. And Dillon Gabriel has played his best football throughout his college career in these big moments. And against his best game of the season was against Ohio State. And so to me, it's like I don't trust anything with Ohio State. And
so you're picking Oregon.
Yes. Yeah, I don't trust. I think it absolutely matters. I think big game nerves matter. That's why I don't trust James Franklin. I don't trust Drew Allie. I don't trust Ryan Day. Those things matter. And Ryan Day's been a good coach. Ohio State's very talented, but it's just, I don't know how they're going to be able to just rally for a big challenging game after what happened against Michigan a month ago.
And then tomorrow night to end things at 7:45, 7-2. Notre Dame against Georgia. Georgia's favored by 1.
This was my big upset pick. I've got Notre Dame in the title because I've got them beating Georgia and then going on and beating Penn State or Boise State. And
Beck is playing?
No. Beck is done.
He's done?
Yeah, he's done. All right. It's John Stockton's kid.
Because for some reason, ESPN has like Beck up there in terms of like the leader still. And I was like, oh, okay. He recovered from the Texas injury just like that.
No, he's already declared for the draft a couple days ago and he's got the surgery. So he's done. So it'll be Stockton that'll start this game.
It's John's kid?
No, it's not. I had to make that joke.
I had a lot of jokes ready.
But yeah, when you look at the way he played against Texas, first drive, he was really solid. After that,
Karl Malone's not at this game either.
After that, it looked really bad. And Notre Dame's secondary is game changing. Like they can absolutely impact a game and turn the field. Ask USC. Ask Jared Sandler on the Odyssey app about the 200-yard interception returns they gave up in the final minutes of the fourth quarter. So Notre Dame is absolutely a game changer, and I think they beat Georgia.
College football kegger with all the games tomorrow. Again, News Radio 1080 KRLD for the Longhorns and Arizona State. We have Ask Reddit at 7:40, Jerry Jones Live at 8:30. Micah Parsons says, you're looking at it all wrong. Don't look at the scoreboard when judging the Cowboys against filthy, and is Mozzie Smith falling back into some bad habits? Bobby Belt, Cowboys Insider, inside the film room for Cowboys post-hut clarity. Commercial-free expressway is next.
I'm not happy, Sean Sharif, as we start post-hut clarity. So I'm going to pull behind the curtain a little bit. One of the things I do after I watch the tape back, I watch the game initially, watch the tape back, and then typically I go, I want to go over to PFF and I want to see where I differ from them, because I don't trust them on a lot of things, particularly offensive line. But I was like, I want to go.
You're usually happy when things are opposite from them.
Yeah. If they've got, like, if I'm talking up Jalen Brooks, I want Jalen Brooks to have a 20 grade, like, because that tells me, all right, they don't know what they're talking about. If I'm talking about Brock Hoffman playing well, I want them to say Brock Hoffman is the worst offensive lineman in the NFL. If I say Tyler Guyton is struggling, I want them to have a 99 on him. That's how I look at it. So I was going like, oh, yeah, I need to check that. So we were getting ready to start the segment. And I was like, oh, I need to go back and check PFF. I didn't look and see what they graded people the other day. Because yesterday, I had given Jalen Brooks a star up. And you went, I didn't even know he played.
Yeah, one catch.
Because it was very...
He was your first star up.
He played like 10 snaps. But it was something where I saw a couple different things that gave me evidence that he's progressing the right way. And I go and I pull up PFF. And the top graded offensive player is Jalen Brooks.
Wow.
And part of me wants to use that to dunk that I used him yesterday. But I don't. It's like saying, like, hi, in your face, Sean, Dan Orlovsky agreed with me. It's like, I don't want that at all. So now I have to.
It's impressive. It's a very impressive football observation by you.
I have to reevaluate a lot of different things.
You do watch more football.
Yeah, that's what it is. I showed Kristen that audio for the first time the other day.
Me versus Choppy.
She was dying laughing. She thought that was so fun. It is good audio. I know you don't like listening to it, but it is good audio.
Yeah.
All right, post-hut clarity. Sean teased it a little bit.
I'm gonna take over here for a second.
Okay.
Because Micah Parsons went viral again.
Ooh.
Couple Cowboy fans, like probably 2 out of 20, said, no, it's actually a good football point if you listen to the end of it. This was Micah Parsons after the Eagles' embarrassment saying, no. Don't really focus on the scoreboard.
I mean, you look at their play, I mean, they have 2 big runs. And 3 good deep shots. Other than that, we made them earn it, and you take away the scoreboard. It was about five plays that decided this game. And you hate to say that because it's a lot of football, but you know, the 2 deep shots to Devontae Smith and the one to AJ Brown, and also Devontae on that slant. You know, for the most part, we were making them earn it. 3 yards, 2 yards, 4th and 1s. Which is good football for when you're playing a team like the Eagles, but the other side is that when you play in those big teams, we understand big plays is going to happen.
The most common word used to criticize Micah Parsons over the last month plus is delusional.
Uh-huh.
Is that delusional or next level football insight of it's really just 5 plays?
I wonder if that's code for Andrew Booth sucked today. In one part, like, hey, we were stopped. We got beat by chunk plays. Who's giving up the chunk plays? I wonder if that's partly like.
But Saquon went off in the second half.
Yeah, he did. They got worn down, but they were already up big by the time Saquon started running the ball well. And so I wonder if that's a part of it. I do think that. What is the thing that you would say I'm most dug in against? Pick a topic, whatever it is.
Dug in against?
Yeah, that I'm just like, I will never give them credit for anything or anything like that. Is there anything like that?
I mean.
Kalen Clark.
McCarthy, okay.
Who did you say?
Kalen Clark.
Oh, Kalen Clark. That's a good one.
McCarthy. Let's say, because I said to stick to athletics, Peyton. So let's say that McCarthy.
We have a spittle meeting today.
Let's say McCarthy does something really well. And I'm just like, well, it wasn't really him. I think that's Micah. Micah clearly has reached a point, I think, where he doesn't like the Eagles, the way he's talked about them. Recently said, like, no, I don't want them to beat Washington, or I don't want them to win against Washington, even though it helps us. Like, I'd rather they lose. I think.
So you're saying he's doing this to kind of take away from the Eagles?
I don't think he wants to credit them at all. He likes Saquon. Obviously, that's a Penn State guy. But I don't think he wants to credit the Eagles at all because they've talked a lot of trash about him, and I don't think he appreciates
it. When Micah says something like this, I go right to Twitter. This is what X is for. And Cowboy fans did not disappoint. I was close to winning the Mega Millions if you take away the 6 numbers. I'm actually very rich if you don't look at my bank account. Jerry Jones has already trained Micah perfectly when talking into a microphone. So all these Micah examples were thrown out there for jokes, and I was there for it for a good 15, 20 minutes yesterday.
Peyton has perfect attendance if you don't look at Mondays.
Give us your fill in the blanks on the Franklin Franco injury attorney text line. Micah-esque comparisons.
Yeah, hit us, and we'll read some here. All right, let's lead off with one of Micah's scouting evaluations. Mozzie Smith has slipped back into some problems. And I don't know. Here's the thing. When you see a stretch where he played really well, he played average to above average to really good somewhere in that vicinity every game for like 6-7 weeks in a row, which massive credit to him, massive credit to Jeff Scania, the defensive line coach who really focuses on the work with the tackles, that a guy who was starting to hang his head a little bit and could have gone a Taco Charlton or Tristan Hill route where they let it beat them up. Credit to him for rallying and picking it back up and playing good football for 6-7 weeks. The last 2 weeks have not been good. And specifically Sunday was bad. He's had issues the last few weeks with his anchor. He's getting driven off the ball more. The double teams are getting to him. He's not playing with the same sort of power or base that we had seen the last few weeks. He's getting off the ball fine most of the time. That's always been a big issue of his. But he was getting driven off of the ball and dominated the last 2 weeks physically to the point that it makes me wonder, when we saw how he had played over those 7 weeks, now it's like, okay, he might be banged up. I don't know. But if we're getting near the end of the season, guys, a lot of times he's playing more snaps. He's getting double teamed. I wonder if he's just fatigued and beaten up and it's taking its toll. But not a great day for Mozzie Smith. Let's talk about another Cowboys young defensive lineman, a guy who I don't think we've said he's been bad all year. We've given him good marks. Marshawn Nealand had problems in this game. And Nealand, again, is a guy who has dealt with injuries this year. But when he's been out there, solid, good baseline player. He's never going to be a big sack guy. I would guess he has, his ceiling is probably on average, maybe he gets like five, six a year. He's very DeMarcus Lawrence light. But DeMarcus Lawrence light means setting the edge well and being able to defend the run and do those sort of things. And he did not do that in this game. He had his trouble getting blown off of the ball. He had his trouble wrapping up and finishing tackles. Again, same sort of question. When you get younger players, do they have issues playing deeper into the season? Osa, for years, the first 3 years of his career, Brian always made the analogy, said he's a college player. It's like he never got away from the college structure where he'd hit the 12-game mark of the season, just like in college football, and then it was like he was worn out and gassed for the last month of the year.
Yeah.
He's reversed it this year where he's played his best ball as the year's gone on. But it does make me wonder, is Nealand just getting a little exhausted and worn down at the end of the season? But physically,
people are speculating that, by the way, about the Steelers. We haven't brought this up here on the show, like, what players or teams are hitting the wall. John Gruden the other day had brought it up, and I'm just thinking about the next Monday night matchup with Cincinnati and Pittsburgh after last night's game. And he brought them up as a candidate of hitting the wall. We really haven't had that conversation of who's hit the wall for this season on the Cowboys.
Yeah, but I mean, that's you might be seeing it around now and those sort of things. I'm going to give a couple more revised star ups because I didn't give them star ups yesterday. And I think you gave star ups to both of them. And
so I watch more football.
You do. Yeah. And I think there was praise for them on social media when I was watching the game and I was following along. It's just, a lot of times you're focusing on a different area and I didn't notice them as splashy, I guess, until I watched the film back. Eric Kendricks was really great in this game. Big time difference maker in the run game. And then Deron Bland played better than I thought he did.
Nothing from AJ Brown. And does Deron Bland travel a lot more than Diggs did?
Yes. Deron Bland tends to move more than he did, but he was definitely traveling with Brown.
And what does that say?
I don't know. Flexibility. I think they feel like Deron Bland is a better athlete than Diggs. Diggs is not very fast, relatively speaking. He's an NFL athlete. He's fast, but he's not fast relatively speaking. He never ran his 40 at his pro day or combine.
Yeah.
Diggs was thought, I believe he, when you talk to people around the league, personnel people, the thought was Diggs was probably around a 4.58, 4.55 speed guy. And that's not So I think they feel like they have to get him matchups a little bit more, or they don't necessarily want to travel him with somebody. Whereas Bland, they feel like, well, Bland can play physicality. Bland can play speed. He's just a solid player. He can play inside. He can play outside. He can follow somebody in the slot. They're not usually going to follow Diggs into the slot. So I think they just feel like Bland's got more flexibility that he can do that. Is it a knock on Diggs? Not necessarily. I think it just speaks to Bland is a more versatile player than Diggs is. And it's not necessarily that he's better. He's just more versatile. But Diggs definitely had his struggles here. But Bland, I thought, overall,
because in the world of corner credit, and I take this back to Patrick Peterson and Richard Sherman, Josh Norman, that era, we give you a lot of corner street cred if you follow and play both sides. Richard Sherman got knocked all the time. You know, it's like kind of like a soft, not a soft thing, but a chicken thing, a lack of versatility thing. Like, hey, if you the dog, go ahead and follow.
And I think Diggs would want it. Like, I think Diggs is very competitive, and Diggs trusts himself. We played the audio.
Yeah, I know. I see my DMs.
Yeah. We talked about...
You wait for that.
We talked about Diggs earlier this year, how he would get offended when you were asking him, how good is this receiver?
Yeah.
It's like, why aren't you asking how good I am? Like he gets worked up about weird stuff, but he's competitive like that. I think the Cowboys just go, it's matchup dependent. It's not that we don't think you're a great corner. It's just we need to maximize who's going up against who. By the way, we've got some answers on the Frankel & Frankel injury attorneys fan text for your fill in the blank. I'm 6'4". If you take away those 5 inches, that's from Black and Gold B. 817. Sean looks like a normal guy if you don't look at his hands.
Oh.
641. I don't even know what area code that is. My ex-wife is a virgin if you don't look at all the baby daddies.
Yay!
817. I'm a great driver if you take away the 3 DWIs. So, not bad. You can keep sending those in on the fan text. Last point here on the offensive line. I did think Guyton struggled. Like, I had him as a star down. I thought Guyton struggled. In fact, initially I said Guyton, Hoffman, Steele. Big struggles. I'll revise it a little. Steele was better than I initially thought live. He was not great, but he was better. Hoffman, Guyton had issues. Chuma Edoga was pretty good in pass protection, I thought, and didn't have nearly the struggles that Guyton did. And this is why I think the Cowboys, if Edoga had been healthy, and McCarthy talked about this a couple weeks ago, if Edoga had been healthy, they would have started the year with him. That they would have just said, look, Guyton's still coming along. He's still figuring things out. To be fair, 4 years ago, Tyler Guyton was a defensive tackle. Like, we got to remember that this guy is not just switching right to left. He is still very young in playing the position of offensive line. He hasn't done a lot, but he's got great traits, and you hope it comes together. It's just not there yet. Things don't work in harmony with him, with his feet and his hands, and he doesn't feel in sync. And it causes defensive linemen to be able to get him off balance or to step inside on him. And it causes a lot of problems. Edoga has played better than Guyton every time he's been out there, basically.
Wow.
And I don't know, long term, do you say, oh, let's try and bring Edoga back? Or not long term, but let's try to bring Edoga back last year or next year some insurance. But Guyton's going to have to do some work because Edoga has outclassed him this year. And specifically on Sunday, Edoga was much better.
So Tyler Smith's rookie season has just run laps around Guyton's, but you have never, first off, confirmed that statement?
Yes? Yeah, no.
But you have not expressed deep concern for Guyton moving forward?
No, because I think this is the one factor I can't know, but I haven't heard, is the hang your head factor that we talked about with Mozzie.
Yeah.
Does Tyler get down about this? Does he allow it to beat him up? Because it's natural to expect guys are going to struggle. Tyron Smith had an awful rookie year. He was not good. And he bounced back, and he went through it. Guyton's just, he's got to keep his head up, and he's got to learn from these things, which I think he will, because the skill set's really good. The thing about Tyler Smith was, you knew the skill set was good. How coachable is he? How teachable was he? The scouting staff knew he's teachable. He takes to it. It was Klein Kubiak, who was the area scout at the time for Tulsa, he talked on the draft show with us right after they picked Tyler Smith. And that was one of the first things he said, you knew talking to people at Tulsa, you would see the traits, but you knew talking to people at Tulsa and being around the program, oh, this guy's going to click into place because of the character, the study habits, how teachable he is, how he takes to it, how many times you have to coach him on certain things. So they knew they could project that out. Guyton, I'm sure they saw similar things. That's why they picked him. I don't know How long is it going to take to click into place? And does he hang his head or not? But skill set wise, I think he's a Pro Bowler in the next 5 years.
Whoa. And that is why he is our, although I guess we don't need the segment anymore. We can just read PFF. That is why he's our Cowboys insider, Bobby Roberto Belt, back from filthy with post hut clarity.
One more Micah fill in the blank for you.
Oh, yeah.
817. Bobby's a really nice guy. If you take away the fact that he was homeschooled and he even made his mom quit on him.
Oh. Happy New Year. 877-881-1053 on the Franklin Franco Injury Attorney text line. Two more Cowboy follow-ups after the Eagle beatdown. Why not just throw everything into the pot here? PFF and Dan Orlovsky yesterday on ESPN when they were having the debate over whether Mike McCarthy should come back.
Mike McCarthy's a very good football coach. He obviously has proven he's a Super Bowl winner. There is absolutely no way that you can watch the Vikings play offensive football, the Lions play offensive football, the Packers play offensive football, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers play offensive football, the Rams play offensive football, and think that schematically you can just run it back and play an even game. His scheme is behind where the NFL offenses trend right now. If you want to bring him back because you think he's got great leadership skills and galvanizes the group and leads the men, and he's going to be your head coach and you're bringing a different offensive philosophy, I can get on board with that. But if it's we're going to keep the same offensive philosophy, I don't think you don't watch the same football as I do then. And you don't realistically think about football the same way as I do. Because I watch every snap and I watch some of these new age offensive minds, and the advantages that they create for their players are so significantly greater than the advantages that are created for the Cowboys players. Plain and simple.
What
a liar.
Oh, so you think McCarthy's ahead of the curve? He's like Ben Johnson schematically.
No, look, first off, on that point, let's just get something clear. Dan Orlovsky can never be given credit for anything. Because
he's your most dug in
topic. No, because last week, let's say we were sitting here last week on Tuesday. I was like, the Eagles are going to destroy the Cowboys. Saquon's going to run all over them. This is what's going to happen. Let's say that then Wednesday, I say, Cowboys are going to gut this one out. We're going to win a close ball game. Thursday, and Cowboys keep it close, but Eagles win in the end. Friday, come out. Dallas is, I think they're going to shock the world. They're going to blow people out. I've got a cut for everything. So when we come back, it's like, well, you got to give Bobby credit. He did say that the Eagles were going to blow him out and Saquon was going to run wild.
But he has consistently criticized McCarthy's schemes.
This year, like last year, he talked about, and 2 years before that, he talked about Dak as the problem as opposed to McCarthy. And he talked about it. He's done this before where he talks about, oh, McCarthy's great. He flips and flops on Dak. Is Dak a franchise quarterback or not? Does Dak deserve this or not? He's got to have a take for everything so he can have a clip to go back to and say, I did it. Now, the issue, he's just, well, I won't say that. I've caused myself enough headaches recently. I watch every snap. No, you don't.
You don't think he's watched every Cowboy film review?
No, I don't think maybe Cowboys. I think in the context of what he's just saying there, because he's talking about trends around the league.
Yeah.
He's saying he watches every snap of the NFL
you
season.
He's gone back and watched every film. Is that an impossible thing?
Yes. Do you see how often he's on TV? Think about it. How often he's on TV, how often he's doing different things, and just listen to him talk about football. Does that sound like somebody who's aware of what's actually happening around the league at all times? There's zero chance that dude. That is so much. That's 3 hours every game. And you're talking about 16 games a week?
And he's a college analyst.
He is not watching however much that is. He's not. There's zero chance that he's watching 48 hours of game film a week. You liar.
Commercial free expressway.
God, he sucks.
Here on DFW Sports Station, 105.3 The Fan. The three things I was pointing out from that, if Orlovsky was on here and not, you know, lying about a dentist appointment, which kind of ended our relationship last time, I would first ask, okay, what does it mean? Explain to me how the schemes are ancient. Explain that to me.
So what are they running? It depends. Yeah, recently, especially the game last week against Tampa Bay, we talked about this. You were out, so you didn't hear this. Tampa Bay was stunning when you watch the tape back, because it's McCarthy completely changed the scheme for Tampa Bay in a way that we hadn't seen all year. And I was like, okay, this is...
And now explain how.
They went back to classical West Coast concepts. So everything that you heard about McCarthy, when McCarthy got hired on as the, or was named the play caller, and we were back reviewing everything from his time in Green Bay, and we're talking about these are the concepts that you'll do and these sort of things. And then when they started the season, it felt very reserved and pulled back and didn't feel totally classic West Coast. And then after the bye week, when it seems like somebody must have said, we need some changes here, it was a completely different looking offense that pushed the ball down the field, did deep crossers, did those sort of things. This version is not, the version against Tampa Bay was not the version of the offense that finished the season last year, was not the version of the offense McCarthy started with in 23, was not the version of the offense we see most of the time. It was the version that we saw in Green Bay. It was a ton of three-step out, five-step out, seven-step out, and a lot of slant-flat combos. So slant-flat combos are going to be, you've got the
two tight outside end, receivers.
Tight end and slot are going to the flats.
Yes.
The outside receivers, the X running and Z, slants. They're running slants. And it's just...
Now, is that viewed as outdated old stuff?
Always take a profit. There are coaches and philosophies who say there's nothing wrong with methodically moving the ball down. If you're having success with it, and the thing that people love about the West Coast system, the thing Aaron Rodgers has advocated for forever about, is the idea of if you are perfect in your timing, if you're perfect in your study, everything else, you can be less talented than the team across from you. They can cover you tight. They can do whatever they want. They can't stop you because of just the precision that exists within it. And it then sets up play action stuff, pushing the ball downfield. They have, Dallas has consistently throughout this year run the widest formations in the NFL. Against Tampa Bay, they ran tighter formations than they have all year. Everything really tight, condensed, which is more similar to what San Francisco and some of these other teams run.
Bunch.
Yeah. They ran four plus receiver sets against Tampa Bay, I think seven times. They had all year run them like 25. And so it was something where that was a classic McCarthy thing from back in his early days in Green Bay. He ran five receiver sets, four receiver sets all the time. And then you look at Turpin the last 2 weeks, all of a sudden is running the ball inside. They've been doing jet sweeps or tosses. Now they've got him running inside and doing traps and different things like that. And that's what he used to do with Ty Montgomery. Ty Montgomery was a receiver that he lined up in the backfield and had him run inside, and sort of what they do with Debo and different things like that. So it's been more West Coast true,
yeah,
against Tampa and some of the stuff lately. And I wonder if that's, I've had to adjust some things. While we were still alive, I had to lean into Rico Dowdle. When we had Dak, Dak's got to be in control of the offense to some extent. If I'm going to be judged on if I'm returning these last few weeks, we're going to do it exactly my way. And so I'm going to commit to, hey, if you don't have me back, I'm putting something on tape for other teams to say, this is what my offense would have looked like, by the way.
Which yesterday, Mike Zimmer, in getting very emotional and talking about his son and everything else, he said his biggest regret this year was not coming in and doing things his way to start off. And he said, I probably wasn't much of a hard ass. I wasn't as pound the fist with my schemes and my stuff because I came in and said, okay, DQ had a good defense here. Let's not change things up too much. And Zimmer expressed that as a big regret. The other question I would have for Dan Orlovsky's audio right there, and I would ask this to Belichick and Brady, and Aikman, who keeps saying, Mike's a good coach. What I would say to Dan is, if you're killing someone for being ancient and way behind the times with their area of expertise, Mike in offense, how does that make you a really good coach? It drives me crazy when people say that. That's like saying, oh, well, you know, Sharif's a really good radio host, except he stutters all the time. True. Screw you, Mike Bassick. And he can't interview and he can't set up topics and he can't do commercial reads, but he's a good host. No, it means I'm not a good host. So if you're way behind, why do people keep throwing that in? Rex Ryan, they keep on saying, Mike's really, really good. Mike's really, really good. Well, then how can you can't be way behind and costing your team from a schematic standpoint and still be a really good coach. That bothers me. And then the third thing, you want to touch on that?
I was just going to say, I would guess that what they would say is, if it's a little behind the times or it's not as innovative schematic-wise, they would just say, but it's everything else. It's the way he protects his players,
okay,
in terms of their health.
Well, that leads me into the third point.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to ask this to Cowboy Tolos, who are not agreeing and upset with the possible probability of Mike coming back. Orlovsky said, I'd be fine with him, you know, CEO role, but you bring in the new offensive mind. Here are my follow-ups to that.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest problems with Mike McCarthy and the way he runs a team, I feel like the Dallas Cowboys are undisciplined. I feel like they're not football smart. They don't do the little things correctly. That's my biggest problem with the why I would have someone replace Mike. Does that go away? And people and these guys like Mike. That's a good thing. He can handle the Jerry noise. That's a good thing. He seems to have a good working relationship with McClay and Steven. That's a good thing, right? He kind of understands or is now familiar with the way things are done around here. Do those issues with culture and not being tough enough and not being smart enough, do they go away if Mike is still the CEO head coach? Can you have a Ben Johnson? Because I think we do this a lot of times with defensive coordinators. We go, Brian Flores can come in here and make them some badasses. Mm-hmm. But we don't really do it with offensive coordinators. Could a if they found the next Ben Johnson tomorrow, or they found a new offensive coordinator, could that person change the identity and attitude of the team, even with Mike as the CEO head coach? Could it work with Mike as a CEO and you just get, you know, brand new attitudes and mentalities on O and D in the coordinators?
That's a good question. I'm trying
brilliant
to think.
Questions.
Because I think
I'm a great radio host.
I think you're right.
Great radio.
I think we've got that. We got that clip for later year in review. Audio.
We're
too.
Run out of time. Probably.
I think that defense definitely does feel like it. Maybe this is a better way to put it. It matters who. What's the philosophy of the head coach? Is it an offensive or defensive head coach? If you have an offensive head coach, I think it's harder for an offensive coordinator to come in here and establish culture because that kind of belongs to the head coach.
Yeah.
When you've got an
Kellen, here's my cookbook.
Yeah, or even still, just involved, wanting to be involved and keeping an eye on there and still the ultimate authority. When you've then got an offensive-minded head coach, then whoever's the defensive coordinator is like the head coach for those defensive players. That's the person who they respond to. That Mike McCarthy said it. He said that when he was in Kansas City, he said, man, I learned early on the last thing you wanted was Marty Schottenheimer coming into your offensive meetings. If you weren't doing things the right way, you wouldn't want Schottenheimer coming in there because he was a defensive coach and he was going to focus on the defensive side of the ball. So a lot of times, it's not even an expectation that Schottenheimer or the head coach is going to drop in on the other side of the ball their meetings. And so Zimmer is like their head coach on defense. Quinn is like their head coach on defense. And you go through and look at that. And when McCarthy is an offensive-minded head coach, he's naturally probably going to be the one that they respond to in terms of physicality, mindset, different things like that. And on the reverse, if Mike Vrabel comes in here, whoever they hire as defensive coordinator, Vrabel doesn't do it. Vrabel's probably going to be looked at as, no, but that's head coach over there. And whoever's running the offense, Vrabel would be looked at as kind of secondary to whoever the offensive coordinator is. And so I think it kind of depends. Like, did we ever feel like Garrett was, even though he wasn't calling plays, did we ever feel like Garrett was?
Well, he did call plays at one time.
Right, but near the end, did we feel like Garrett was ultimately responsible for the defense, or were we always talking about Marinelli and Chris Richard?
Never.
And so I think you're right. It's probably going to be tough for whatever offensive coordinator they bring in here to change mentality or approach or anything else as long as you have McCarthy or any other offensive coach as your head coach. That's going to be tough.
All right. Since this has gone long here with Cowboys topics, might as well finish up with the thing that ticked off a lot of people yesterday. Stephen Jones was on the KMC Masterpiece, and they asked, and they got a lot of great headlines yesterday, so props to Bassick and Will. I can't do a crosstalk with Will, but Will can apparently do a Stephen interview.
And one more thing, Sean. One more thing.
They asked Stephen to compare the way the Cowboys roster is built to Philadelphia, right? Because a lot of people on social media go, Philly's paying all these big names and they still add. So what's the difference with the way y'all been constructed?
Yeah, I think one of the things, too, is, you know, unfortunately, that, you know, we have had, and, no, you know, I'll say it again, the world's smallest violin, but, you know, we have over 50% of our cap on IR. And those things, you know, when they hit and hit at the wrong time, you know, it makes for a challenge, you know, for a team. Obviously, San Francisco is another team that's had their share of injuries this year in terms of, you know, a big percentage of their cap, you know, sitting on IR. I mean, those are things that, you know, come with the territory. I know, you know, everybody has their different battles with the cap that hit at different times. And, you know, Philly will have theirs coming up. Well, they'll have to make tough decisions. But, yeah, we're constantly looking at ways to look at our salary cap to give us the best opportunity with players like Dak, CD, and Micah. You know, you throw Diggs in there, you know, to let those guys, you know, hopefully, one, stay on the field, but two, you know, give us the best opportunity to make a great run.
So, Bob, people were infuriated. I saw KG post a video and some others. Why you put in your hands, players always say, don't put your hands in other people's pockets. Why you putting your hands in the Eagles' pockets? How dare you compare yourself to the Eagles when they won a championship and had way more playoff success than you and maybe on the way to another? There was an old Rams clip going around yesterday of Steven kind of being like, oh, a lot of risk there, that all-in mentality. So people, Jerry and Steven were actually trending, Jerry and Steven, after Steven's response to this yesterday in projecting. And people were like, oh, you're just projecting doom and gloom for the Eagles cap? Like, it's coming for them. The cap's coming for them as well, just like it did for us.
Yeah, I mean, that's...
It didn't sound...
That feels like Gerard Mayo criticism for invoking the Belichick thing, where it's like... The dude, you ask him a question about it, he's got to use examples or analogies across the league.
I didn't have a problem in listening to the audio.
No, I think it's fine. You can disagree with the philosophy or what he's saying, but...
The headline turned into, Eagles have salary cap hell coming too.
Yeah, and that's, again, the salary cap is viewed...
Oh my God.
What? What? What?
Don't get that on the fan cam, Carter, please. Carter, what? Nothing. I just, nothing. I took a shot in the eye.
Oh, okay. I bet you did.
Shot right in the eye.
I look at
this damn water bottle.
Yeah, by the way, I saw some coffee drippings in the lobby again.
My mother-in-law got me a new cup.
Oh, okay. Good. Because those.
This thing's done.
Yeah. It's over with. I think that it's reasonable to point to other examples across the league and say, this is what's happening here. They're going to run into these things. The thing is that I've drawn this analogy recently. When you look at the salary cap, it's no different than talking about economics in the United States or whatever else. I'm going to be very
general. Get ready, 1080 KRLD.
When you look at what is this tax bill going to do? What is this going to do? There are four different opinions from economists. It'll do this to the economy. It'll do this. Same sort of thing. If we do this, it'll do this to our cap. If we do this, it'll do that. There's just different perspectives. You can disagree with Steven, but they are going to have a perspective.
Jerry Jones, live at 8:30. Y'all, that is a big fat football breakfast sandwich on the home of America's team with our Cowboys insider Bobby Belt. I'm Sean Treve. That is the commercial-free expressway. Is Josh Allen the new Dan Marino? And Troy Aikman says, forget about the big two. This should actually be the MVP. Around the rest of the NFL, next on The Fan.